Battery's working?
Yep.
John Rivette with Dorothy McMeekin on February 23rd, 2015. Kind of preliminary half hour or so interview. Talk about things I wanted to talk to Dorothy about. So, what year did you start working at MSU?
Approximately 1968,
67. 68. Okay. Because I came in 77, and I think we met during one of the organizing, the attempts to unionize the faculty, and that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Do you remember how many times there were attempts to unionize the faculty at MSU, the tenure faculty?
I only remember one election.
Okay. Which one is it that you remember?
Now you've got me.
Do you think it was approximately 71, 79, or 82? Or where were you?
It would be the last one that they did.
Okay, so that'd be 82?
Yeah.
Where were you working then?
I was working in the natural science department in Kedzie.
In North Kedzie?
North Kedzie, yes.
Okay, and I was in South Kedzie with School of Labor Industrial Relations.
Okay.
So would it, names like Phil Korth or Gladys Beckwith be people that you remember being involved with that organizing attempt?
Very definitely, yes.
Okay. Because I think both of them at some point in those years were the quote-unquote president of the effort. So do you remember who, anything in particular about it? It's a long time ago.
Yeah, it is a long time ago.
And this was, I said, just kind of preliminary to get us started
I'm
about
going
it.
To, I remember going somewhere over at the MEA, I think it was, and having a meeting. And whether we made the phone calls from there or I made them from my home, I don't remember. But we would call various faculty and give them information, so on.
Okay. So in both of the last two efforts, there actually were three. In the last two, I don't know the first because I wasn't here and I didn't prepare notes because it didn't look like we were going to do the interview today. There were a couple groups that tried to unionize. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Okay. There was the MEA group that you were mentioning that went by the name Faculty Associates.
Exactly.
And then there was another group with AAUP.
That's right, there was difference.
There were some different faculty who were the AUP group, and they were a joiner. The Faculty Associates group had to file cards for 30%, and I think you may have been asked to try to help us collect people's signature to say they want an election. Is that?
I probably did, yes, probably.
And Faculty Associates came, they only had to file 10% as the second one to be on the ballot.
Right.
Okay. Do you recall what kind of faculty in the university were or were not interested in that organizing attempt?
What I do recall is it coincided with the development of the College of Medicine.
Okay.
And this is just gossip.
Right. The value of doing this kind of interview doesn't matter exactly. It just kind of fills
in just the
story.
The words that got to me, that those were people that coming in the medical college were not particularly interested in teaching.
Okay.
On the level. I was in the introductory level, you know, general education required science class primarily for non-science majors.
Okay.
So those of us in that category had fairly, well, I had 120 people in class, split into several labs, and I taught the labs also. And so that's one kind of academic position, you're getting all novices and so on.
Okay.
And the medical crowd, in terms of status, in my opinion, they had their status, they probably didn't need to belong to a union.
Uh-huh.
So that was a division there.
Were you teaching in those old classrooms on North Kedzie that were just in that half floor up? Is that the ones you, those lecture halls?
No, they were very good lecture halls.
I didn't mean they weren't good, but they're kind of, North Kedzie's an older building.
Correct.
Right. And on the first floor, the kind of half floor up, there were these this wonderful lecture hall that was been there a long time. That's what I wondered, if that's where you taught.
Well, there was one lecture hall in the old part of Kedzie.
Uh-huh.
And then there were these attached classrooms.
Which are pretty new, right.
Yeah, and
you taught in the new parts. Both.
Sometime for some years in one, some in another.
Okay. Because for labor-industrial relations for our grad classes, we weren't doing undergrad then. We had a much smaller classroom because we only had classes of like 30.
Oh, yeah.
But I've given guest lectures in those other ones, and I remember the new ones. There are like four of them on the east side of the building.
Yeah, it might be three, but nevertheless.
Okay. But I only remember one of the really kind of quite old ones in that northwest corner.
I really liked the old one very much.
Okay.
Because my office was two or three floors above it.
Okay.
So, you know, you didn't have to run outside or run any distance. But
always struck me it was kind of a very classic mid-20th century kind of classroom, maybe early 20th century.
I'm trying to think of the name of the woman who was a potter in Detroit, but the ceramic tiles in the foyer of that old building are the work of that Michigan artist.
Kind of Pawabic?
That's it, Pawabic pottery.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's sort of unique on the campus for the entryway.
Uh-huh, yeah, it was very...
Occasionally people would have receptions in that entryway.
Uh-huh, and it was a great...
Yeah.
Part of what I thought was interesting, and I wasn't trying to be... I was not being derogatory at all, was that it was one of the few places on campus that still reflected that late 19th century, early 20th century look of classrooms that you see in the archive photos of early MSU or MSC.
And in that building, you see there are, I've forgotten the exact number, but see maybe four or five really nice laboratories for entering students,
mm-hmm.
Seating maybe 30 to 35 mm-hmm. people. So, I was told that that building was just renovated the year I came. The year before I came, right?
In the late 60s. Okay.
That they had been over in the natural science building.
Okay, makes sense.
So I was never in the natural science building.
Uh-huh, okay. And so what you taught was basic Nat-Sci classes.
Correct.
For people who might go to med school as well as general education purposes? Or how did that work?
Well, when I first came, it was required of all the entering students. Then they separated out the science majors, so you only had the non-science ones, but they were in a position where they could switch to science.
Okay.
So,
Now, through the mid-80s, I don't have any dates with me because I wasn't prepping for this because I thought we'd reschedule, but we're having fun. Through the mid-80s, we had these three kind of general colleges here. You were... call that at all, and what was your relationship to it?
Well, it was called University College, and there were four departments. Nat-Sci was one of them, and there was Humanities, ATL, that's American Thought and Language,
mm-hmm.
And some kind of social science.
Mm-hmm.
So these people coming in as most of them 18 years old would take those four. So it was sort of an introduction to the university.
Okay. And so I mentioned that a couple activists in the FA organizing effort was Phil Korth and Gladys Beckwith.
Correct.
Where were they in that mix?
Gladys was ATL.
She, uh-huh.
She was a graduate of MSU in, I'll say, literature or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not 100% sure, of course. He might have been in ATL or social science.
He was also in ATL.
Okay.
Phil's been interviewed by the Sesquicentennial project that got done a few years ago.
Okay.
And I think Gladys might have been also, but I interviewed Gladys about the organizing effort.
Yeah.
So I wasn't looking for dates from you or anything like that. I was just curious from the perspective of from my perspective, I was one of the kind of key people trying to organize for FA. And I was in College of Social Science. And from my perspective, the areas that were most interested in unionizing were the humanities, the ATL, some of the basic NATSCI, social science, and then... Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing I learned a number of years later, that the crowd, ATL and humanities social science were in Bessie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
NATSCI was in Kedzie.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we were in the same college, we didn't know each other very well, you know. So they tended to form a group, we'll say.
Okay.
But, so I think the people I knew, all the people I knew in Kedzie, the NATSCI faculty, were all interested.
Mm-hmm.
But they just didn't have the connection personally.
At least the MEA FA people tended to be very much concentrated in those areas. The AUP had some from there. People that I remember most involved was like Coletta Mosier was part of that AUP group.
Now that you mentioned her.
Maybe Lash LaRue, I'm not positive. I did some other interviews years ago, and I got to go back to check.
Name, the fellow Adams was sort of...
Walter.
Pushing. Yeah.
Right. And I think from the FA perspective, I probably learned this from Gladys, there was a feeling that they didn't really want to unionize.
Exactly. That's my feeling.
But if MSU was going to get unionized, then they thought it should be AUP and not MEA in doing it.
And I think Wayne State at the same time approximately unionized under AAUP. I'm
exactly.
Not sure.
You're right.
Yeah.
What would be your way of summarizing to somebody else why did the MSU faculty not unionize? What do you think the reason
for? Well, I mentioned one. I think the coming in of the medical school was a major factor.
Being included among
and
the voters.
Also, this definite shift that away from undergraduates to faculty research. This, my background is in botany, but I knew what was going on up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't getting along very well with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was one man who was arrested for something.
I don't know the story.
Well, I'll have to...
We'll talk again.
Yeah.
This is just getting us started. We'll do this again in a month or something. How's that?
Yeah.
I think that would, in fact, be how to approach this, is come back in April. We can both look at
some
documents.
See, the one thing I wanted to mention to you, because I know you have to do something else today, is, and I had a conversation with Gladys about this sometime in the past year. The question, you know, the MEA supported a case against the university respecting the difference in salary between women and men.
Correct.
Okay. And then within the last 6 months, there was an article in...
Recently, our 6 months? 2015? Yes. Okay, so this, somewhere in 2014.
And I wish I kept it, but I couldn't find it when I was coming.
But we could come back to that in a month. How's that?
Yeah, well, or if I can't find it, you can always go to the newspaper office and describe it, and I want to describe it to you.
Mm-hmm.
What it was is a comparison between the, I want to say Ivy League, but it's, what is it, the Big Ten schools.
Okay. And CIC.
Yeah.
It's the name they use that includes Chicago.
Somebody wrote an article in the campus newspaper, the student paper.
Our paper here at MSU?
At MSU, yeah.
Okay.
Comparing women and men's salaries, and the closest was at MSU. All right.
The differential at MSU, male-female,
yeah,
was lower.
Yeah, the female is a little bit lower, but not much.
But much bigger at Northwestern, U of M, Wisconsin.
Exactly. And it was a wonderful graph, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Laying out the numbers. So if you said to somebody in the newspaper office, wherever they're located on campus, they may be across the street now.
Oh, yeah, they are. That wouldn't be hard to do.
Yeah.
But if you found it, you could let me know. That wouldn't surprise me.
Well, when you're looking for something, you never find it. But at my house, anyway. but they would have it probably computerized and know who wrote it and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's an important...
Do you remember the names, and are any of them alive, of the women who were the ones who were part of that lawsuit? Or I used to know, but I can't remember right now. I have some files, but I don't have anything with me.
Well, I don't know, obviously Gladys and obviously me, and I was the one that went into the courtroom over in Grand Rapids.
Okay, it was you and Gladys.
But one of, and Hildebrand, his wife, was...
Yes, Verna?
Yeah, in the home economics, and I don't...
She passed away.
Oh, okay.
I know John did also. I think both of them.
Yeah,
did.
But they would be in the courtroom.
Yeah,
my memories.
And it was Grand Rapids, right? And MEA was helpful to you in that lawsuit. Well,
they provided the lawyer.
MEA did. Yeah.
Yeah.
They might have files on it too.
They would. Have.
Not a problem, guys. Don't worry.
And I can't remember.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us sit here.
I can't remember her name at the moment.
The attorney?
Yeah, the attorney. It was a woman. And then there was another person over there, a man that seemed, when we got together, he was there, I don't know.
I recall that this was going on, quite frankly, I was chairing the organizing committee, so I was pretty involved.
Yeah, okay.
And I think I probably got connected for the previous one by Bob Ripas.
Yeah, now that's a name.
Sure. So when I came to the Labor Industrial Relations, the school had very vigorous outreaches, one to unions and one to management. And my original job was to do the labor outreach. And so Bob Ripas and Neil Vandevoort were two of the faculty who were tenure faculty who were doing that labor outreach. And so I became part of that group. And I had already been involved in grad school at UMass Amherst, organizing the grad students there. So this was like, to me, just another organizing effort.
You know, I remember Pat Julius. Does that name mean anything?
Hey.
Patricia Julius in ATL?
No, I don't remember that name. Sorry.
Well, I remember we were meeting somewhere, and she had been a model. In other words, she's a very good-looking person.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still alive, has some health problems.
Oh.
And I still have contact with her.
Well, if you let me...
she lives up at Sault Ste. Marie.
I can do telephone interviews.
Yeah. Okay.
I can do this, not right here, but there's a way I can do it in the voice library on telephone and talk to people that way.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll write down her phone number.
Please.
Obviously have it.
Yeah, thanks.
Address. So here, my general impression, and this, I don't think this is biased, I think it's accurate, but a lot of women on the bit of equal treatment and that push.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of are in hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it
sure.
that way. They
yeah.
are afraid.
Yeah.
They like
and if at some point you want to tell me something not on tape, I can just pause it. We keep talking and not put it you on tape. So just let me know.
Yeah. Okay. So this was a pleasant thing when, from me, here was this woman, Pat Julius, and I don't know what her academics, what her mm-hmm. rank was. She eventually became the assistant chair in ATL.
Okay.
To the fellow whose name escaped me at the moment.
Before Doug Nover, though. Nover later is the chair of ATL, but I think
later.
Much later, probably.
Yeah, there.
But he goes way back.
I'm
interviewing Doug separately, so.
I won't say. There's certain people that I should go off the record on for certain behaviors, but anyway.
Another time.
Yeah, another time.
Yeah, because we're going to have to cut this short in about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. So, Pat, since I still know her.
Uh-huh.
I know her.
That'd be great. Thanks.
And was pleasantly surprised that someone who was of what sort of a stereotype of
model type.
Not, would be interested.
Yeah, that's good.
That's
good.
Nice.
Somebody.
And had a totally different personality than matched her exterior.
Uh-huh.
So anyway.
And you think she was ATL, or you know she was ATL?
Oh, well, I know she was.
Okay.
Yeah, of course I know she was.
Okay. There's another guy, a friend of Phil Kors, who somebody else is trying to get me hooked up with, Milt Powell.
Yeah, that sounds right, and I'd have to think a while.
Yeah, I vaguely remember him. As I say, another acquaintance told me you should talk to Milt about if you want to find out more about the faculty union attempt. Now, in a different thing.
I had no contact with him. So.
Do you recall that part of the story had to do with the new president coming in at MSU?
Oh.
That it had been Wharton, but then this guy from Texas came in as president.
Yeah, and again, I've drawn a blank on his name.
Cecil Mackey.
Yeah, that's right.
That was the name, but I didn't know if you had any recollections of the Mackey years or how that
relates
to this.
Well, I remember being at a meeting, and whether it had to do with unions or not, I said something critical of him.
Like at an academic governance meeting of some sort, a faculty senate type thing?
I just don't remember.
Right.
I was never on a committee that would put me there.
Uh-huh. But there were some public forums.
I could tell by his expression he was very offended.
There were a couple public forums where...
No, this was in a small room with just a few people. I don't know what...
Okay.
And why... What group... Maybe it'll come back, but...
The fourth floor of the admin building? In the Board of Trustees room?
I just don't remember.
That's okay. It doesn't matter. Some of these things are clear memories to me and others aren't. That's how it works. It's
well, I remember saying something that offended him, but anyway... Because of his expression. You know.
I had a recollection at the time. I got to know him a little later, a little better. And I think I asked to interview him, and it never happened, so that might tell us something.
Well, that's what put him on a one-to-one with me, because I didn't have an appointment, but I was part of this group.
But I recall that at the time, as one of the people who thought unionizing the faculty was a good idea, that part of the reason was that President Mackey had been brought in to cut things because of the recession of the early 80s. People nowadays focused on our Great Recession of just a few years ago, but in the early 80s, Michigan was in big trouble because of the auto industry's decline and the threat of the import autos.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of fear of that they were going to try to do things differently here. And talk about eliminating nursing, eliminating different departments.
I remember all that, yeah.
Do you? Okay.
And another name that crosses my mind, and I still occasionally have contact with, is Joy Curtis in nursing.
Right.
And her husband would be in AATL.
Okay. That's right.
So...
I have Bruce Curtis, right?
Right, that's the
right
name.
I have a whole book, and I thought it's in the car, if we...
Oh, no.
And... But with names and stuff, and we go through that like in a month or so and see if that jogs either of our memories, too. Were there other key things you wanted to tell me today?
It's the only one. I wasn't sure what questions you would ask. Why I was interested, you know.
That was my next question.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hold on that.
Okay,
fine. I was thinking
that's quite all right.
I was thinking about it at home, and it's escaped me at the moment what I was thinking.
As I was trying to explain why I got involved, partly it was because I had been involved in trying to organize the grad students when I was in grad school. And so partly it's because I was in labor relations and I was teaching labor union leaders. Terry Curry taught management people, and the School of Labor Relations allowed both, unlike currently.
Another thing that I remember just a second is somebody went to court and demanded that the salaries of the faculty be released.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that allowed someone like me to get the numbers, and I had a chart, and a male faculty in the department, number of years, salary, and it was very, very clear that there was a discrepancy there between the two.
And that would have been a main part of your court case, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. That it was sex discrimination.
But I'm the kind, I typed a little list and put it in everybody's mailbox so they knew what was going on. It wasn't...
Now, I didn't expect we could still do this morning. I think if I go back to the interview I did with Bob Ripas years ago, that it may have been Ripas who actually caused that to happen.
Okay, that's probably right.
I
know he was prominent. I know that I didn't know him. You know, he might have been someone I said hello to when I walked across campus, but nothing more.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you always live in Flower Pot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, the first couple of years I was in an apartment.
But there's a house. And Ripas has lived... in the Glencairn neighborhood. So you weren't neighbors.
No.
But Bob and Babs Ripas were in Glencairn.
Yeah.
But I believe either Bob told me or somebody else blamed him for it.
And one of the, I think you've mentioned this name, and it's escaped from me. There's another man, he's now deceased, who was sort of a crony with Rebus, but was in political science, I think.
Okay, what name?
I can't remember.
Oh, I mentioned
it. Yeah, you mentioned it, and it's escaped me again. I actually had his son in class. I had the sons of a number of people, daughters also.
Well, I found a young man, I was about to say, younger than my mid-60s, who was a student assistant for Lance LaRue.
That's the one.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I was just clicking in my mind. He wrote a column frequently in the newspaper.
Right.
And I had his son class, who was similar to his father.
Uh-huh.
And big man.
Okay.
Had been a policeman down in somewhere in the southwest states. And he actually interrogated me, his son, before he would... Huh. Remain permanently in class. And what he was doing, the police are trained to do this, he was afraid that I was disliked his father so much that I might take it out on him. So I could tell he was asking me questions about, because he came up and told me who he was.
Okay.
You know.
Funny. Anyways, this former student assistant of Lash's has agreed to do an interview about some of these stories related to the Labor Industrial Relations School and unionization, because he was a student assistant of Lance's for a year or so, but then became good friends and kept touch with him until his death. So I'm looking forward to that interview.
Yeah.
But I think Lance, and I, it's a long time ago, I used to stop.
Just let me insert this. Somebody, and you'd have to check this, recently when his name came up, I may have mentioned his son, and the son committed suicide.
Right.
I didn't know that.
I did know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Well, I want to let you go to your appointment or whatever it is.
But thank you. This was a great start.
Yeah.
Very helpful. I think, like I say, I'll bring these couple documents I have from Faculty Associates, FA, with the MEA affiliate, and also prepare and listen to some of the other interviews I did, so that'll refresh my memory.
Okay, I don't want to keep you any longer.
Well, let's have you sign the release form, too. Thanks.